Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Second hour of Catholic Answers Live open forum today for pro-life issues, a pro-life open forum. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're happy to have you with us. We finished the week with this pro-life open forum. Any questions you have on any pro-life topic is welcome. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And maybe you have questions about the beginning or ending of life, questions about morally acceptable medical care, or maybe you have someone in your life who's pro-choice and you'd like help addressing their points, 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour, Dr. George Delgado, the medical director of Culture of Life Family Healthcare. He's a board-certified physician in family medicine and in hospice and palliative medicine. He also completed the certification program in healthcare ethics offered by the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Hi, Dr. Delgado.
Good afternoon. How's it going?
Really, really well. Thanks for being with us here as we close business for a Friday. You stayed right till the end.
I'm the anchor.
Yeah, you're the anchor. Fair enough. I just wanted to ask you a question in the news on life issues. On LifeSite, there's this piece about abortion in China. I wondered what you make of that piece.
Yeah, so I saw that also. And, you know, many people know that China has a coercive abortion policy. They previously had a one-child policy where they would allow married couples to have one child, and after that they would put extreme pressure on the couples to become sterilized, or if they did conceive, to have abortions, to coerce them to have abortions. And they would have women literally dragged out of their homes and taken to abortion clinics. Well, then in the last several years, they've relax that a little bit, and now they have a two-child policy, and it's still a big problem. And the reason why they've relaxed it a bit is because in China, as in many Asian countries, there is a predilection for male offspring. So sons are more favored than daughters. And so they have had not just coercive abortion, but sex-selective abortion, so that baby girls have been aborted at much higher rates than baby boys, so that now in China there's an approximate ratio of boys or males of 118 to 100 females, while the global average is something like 103 males to 107. And so, as you can see, that demographically and socially, that puts a huge strain on a country. So you have this large class now in China of single men who have very little prospect of getting married. And once they've reached adulthood, the women are kind of like prizes because they have so many suitors, you know, trying to get their attention. But so China has relaxed it, but in reality, they still are enforcing this two-child policy. And so our good friend Reggie Littlejohn, who has an organization called Women's Right Without Frontiers, WRWF, she gave a presentation at the United Nations trying to increase awareness of this, and also trying to increase awareness of one of the UN's own bodies called the UN Population Fund, which has been cooperating with China in enforcing its two-child policy. And they're demanding transparency because the United Nations shouldn't be in the business of helping countries force women to have abortions.
Right.
And in fact, back in 2002, the U.S. cut off funding from the UN Population Fund because an investigation then by Secretary of State Colin Powell showed that they were complicit with the Chinese family planning officials. Unfortunately, the Obama administration restored this funding, and so now Reggie Littlejohn is trying to put pressure on the U.S. and on the United Nations to investigate and hopefully to defund this organization that really is causing a lot of harm and is really complicit with the Chinese in forcing women to have abortions.
It really is one of the great crimes of the century that is just kind of brushed off in the media. There's just no sense of the horror of hundreds of millions of people really coerced in their decisions about children for decade after decade in China.
Yes, we really are talking about the largest genocide in the history of mankind that's gone on there in China, the genocide of the unborn, and especially focused on unborn females. And so anybody who really cares about women's rights should really be interested in this, and anybody who cares about human rights should have this really on their radar screen.
And Reggie Littlejohn, you can just look her up on the internet. Use your Googleizer or whatever you use there. Reggie Littlejohn, extraordinary person doing great work trying to help the women of China, women all around the world, as a matter of fact. But so she seems very hopeful in this piece, though, that this is actually a moment where things can get changed in China.
She is hopeful, and she's had really small programs operating in China already, where she has people there who are volunteers, who are locals. And when they find out that a woman is being pressured to have an abortion, they will go to her house and encourage her and tell her not to abort and not to abandon a baby girl. Sometimes they after the birth, the baby girls are abandoned and just left to die. And so she's feels that she saved hundreds of baby girls this way in just one small area of China.
Extraordinary work. Keep an eye out for that name, Reggie Littlejohn, and also keep China in your prayers. I think we do have to constantly keep them in your prayers. I wanted to ask you another thing, if I could, Dr. Delgado, while I got you here, because I thought of you this week. I was reading an article in the New Yorker magazine, and the article was about why it's so hard to get an abortion in America. And they had a one line in there that made me think of you because they treated it like it was a joke. That a woman could get a reversal if she had taken a chemical abortion pill. But that's not a joke, is it?
No, it's not a joke. And that's something that we have our abortion pill reversal program. We've helped over 300 women reverse their chemical abortions now. And so the more people hear about it, the more good we can do. And these women who do change their minds after taking the mifepristone, which is the abortion pill, they are so grateful that they have the opportunity to reverse it. It's giving them a second chance at choice.
Sometimes it just seems like we've replaced actual thinking with just derision or just, kind of like insults or mockery. That was just such a foolish thing because I know you have had great success with that, which you're kind of pioneer. You're one of the pioneers in that area yourself with reversing the abortion pill.
Yes, and we're very excited that we have a manuscript that's going to be submitted to a medical journal for publication that will describe over 300 cases. And so the numbers just keep growing and growing. We're having great success rate. We're finding out which protocols work the best for reversal. So we're very excited about all of that news.
Dr. George Delgado is our guest. It is a pro-life open forum to finish the week here on Catholic Answers Live. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-31-TRUTH. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with your calls for Dr. Delgado on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
Talking about abortion can be scary, but so is anything with which you're unfamiliar. People need to learn how to talk about abortion in ways that inspire confidence in the truth of the pro-life position. We must talk about abortion because we are afraid. Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is the new book by apologist Trent Horn that teaches you to face those fears, to engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue with the goal of persuading others. Field-tested on college campuses, Persuasive Pro-Life will help you to change people's hearts and minds and begin to build up a pro-life culture in today's world, one person, one conversation at a time. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, today by calling 1-888-291-8000, going to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area. Also available as an ebook.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
It was 100 years ago that our Blessed Mother appeared to three children in Fatima, Portugal, and Catholic Answers Magazine is marking the anniversary with a very special issue. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 888-291-8000 or by going to Catholic.com. Getting Fatima right, exploding the myths of Fatima, and a closer look at our Blessed Mother. Just a few of the articles to look forward to. You don't want to miss this very special issue highlighting this hallmark event in Catholic history. Don't wait another moment to subscribe. Call 888-291-8000 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Happy Friday of Lent. We hope you're out. Maybe you're out shopping right now, getting some fish for dinner. Did you forget, Nick, to have fish for... No? You're... Okay, Nick says he's getting his fish. Dr. Delgado, what's on the menu tonight? Fish? Quesadillas?
Fish. Yeah. Fish is on the menu.
Oh, yeah, because it's a Friday of Lent. It's open forum, pro-life open forum today on Catholic Answers Live. Any questions you've got about the beginnings, the endings of life, or about proper medical care throughout the course of life, Dr. Delgado is here to help with those questions. We go first to Chuck in Cleveland, Ohio, listening on 1220 AM. Chuck, you are on with Dr. George Delgado.
Good evening. My in-laws, both in their mid-90s, died in the last 6 months, and I was troubled. They were both at a Catholic hospital. And in the course of their treatment, they were sort of decided to go into hospice. And to me, the process was simply putting them on some type of a drug that knocked them out. It was supposed to make them comfortable. And then they were denied any type of hydration or food. And when I asked about it, I was told that, well, if we gave them anything, it would probably cause them to get pneumonia. And from my perspective, they basically both died because they were deprived of sustenance. It was a Catholic hospital. They weren't my parents. They were my in-laws. So I want to talk to somebody about that.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, with how, knowing all the specifics of the cases, I can't really comment on that. But what I can do is talk about general principles, which I think would be pretty much what you want to know anyway, what would be interesting to our audience. So when people are at the end of life, there really is sometimes a tightrope to walk, because as people get older and more frail and sicker, their diseases progress. What I call disease-modifying therapy, treatments that are aimed to either cure disease or slow down disease, they lose their effectiveness. And sometimes using those treatments, for example, hospital and intensive care treatments, they actually cause more harm than good in people who are closer to the end of life. And so we reach a point where we want to shift gears and focus on treating symptoms. And that's often that happens even earlier on than this, and when palliative care is introduced. And palliative care is simply medical care that done by specialists such as myself that focuses on symptom management. And there's, you know, kind of a handful of symptoms that usually go along with people who are getting close to the end of life. And usually that's pain, shortness of breath, anxiety, constipation, and trouble sleeping, sometimes agitation. So those kind of run together in these folks. And so with palliative medicine, you can start approaching and treating those specifically while at the same time still using the disease-modifying therapy, still being more aggressive with other treatments. But then as time goes along and the disease progresses and the patient declines more, then you get closer to more like the last 6 months of life. And there, disease-modifying treatments help much, much less. And sometimes, like I said, they can cause more harm than good. So then the shift can be made to total comfort care. And if the patient has a predictive life expectancy of 6 months or less, then the patient can go on to hospice. And hospice care then is fully focused on that. So the question is about, you know, hydration and feeding. know, from a Catholic perspective, definitely the patient, the default should be the patient should get nutrition and hydration, preferably by mouth. But if the patient's unable to take it by mouth for whatever reason, having a great deal of trouble swallowing or is refusing it, then you have to ask the question, should we give nutrition or feeding through a tube, either through an intravenous or something called a subcutaneous, which is just under the skin, or a feeding tube into the stomach. And there, what you have to do is weigh the relative benefits and the relative harm that could be done by that. So patients who are truly where death is imminent, giving them nutrition only causes them discomfort, and the nutrition is often not even assimilated. If they're not quite imminently dying, then it may be that certain patients, it would cause them either more discomfort or they would not be able to absorb it, or it would cause increased fluid and fluid overload like can happen with patients with congestive heart failure. So you really have to individualize, but keeping those principles in mind. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. One question. When they're in the sleep state, can they hear discussions? Are they aware of what's going on around them?
Well, that's a great question because we really don't know. So what I always tell families is that although the patient may not be responding, whatever you say in front of him or her, you should assume that the patient will hear. So I think we have to be very respectful and circumspect with any kind of comments we make in front of them, even if it appears that they can't hear. And I would also encourage families that when the patient is unconscious or doesn't appear to be responding, to continue to talk to the patient and to continue to, with the physical touch, hugging and holding the hand, stroking them, because some of that is perceived and that can be very comforting. And sometimes when they're not understanding speech, they may actually be able to be affected by music, because we know that music stimulates a more primitive part of the brain. So I encourage music, singing, or just playing music that you know is comforting to them, and always, always assume that they can understand what you're saying.
Thank you very much, Chuck. I hope that was helpful. It is pro-life open forum today on Catholic Answers Live. We go now to Stephanie in Kansas City, Missouri, listening on the EWTN app. Stephanie, your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Thank you. So I understand that medical sterilization is wrong in the Catholic Church, and that, you know, if a Catholic has that done and wants to be in full communion with the Church, that they, you know, would need to go to confession with the understanding that temporal punishment is not gone just because they went to confession. But my question is, how does, you know, because one of the things that has to be present for a valid marriage is to be fruitful. So knowing that that's taken away now, how does this affect, like, marital relations between the spouses?
Right. Yeah, my understanding that the Catholic Church is teaching on this is that definitely what you said first is the most important, that the couple has to have to repent, have remorse, and then receive sacramental confession, and therefore, and of course, God forgives all sins as long as we're repentant. And so then that sin is forgiven, and they have to then move forward. Now, how do they move forward? They're not required to remain abstinent because they've had the sterilization, and they're not required to have a sterilization reversal. But those are certainly options, and so many couples who have gone through this have had sterilization reversal. So that's certainly an option, but it's not required. And the couple that chooses not to, or that even can't conceive after that, is not required to be abstinent. But some couples have found that they have grown closer to God by sacrificing, and by the couple then charting cycles as if they were fertile, and abstaining during the mucus times when they would have otherwise been fertile if they weren't surgically rendered unfertile, or infertile, I should say. And so that's another thing that's optional for a couple to both grow closer together and closer to God by sacrificing sort of in atonement for their sins. but it's not required of them, and I don't think any priest would give that as a penance. I think that would probably be considered excessive for a priest to give as a penance, but it certainly is something that the couple could volunteer to do to increase their holiness, increase their unity with themselves and with God. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for that, Stephanie. We'll go now to Denise in Fort Collins, Colorado, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Denise, you're on with Dr. George Delgado.
Thank you, doctor, for taking my call. My niece, I want to say probably in late October, early November last year, was diagnosed with pulmonary arterial hypertension. She's 29, and she has two little ones. And they, you know, want more children, but with this diagnosis, her doctors are telling her that more children would put too much strain on her heart. And so they're pretty much telling them no more kids. And they've tried, you know, to stay faithful to their faith and using natural family planning. And they're really kind of confused now with this diagnosis and what doctors are advising them. And so when I heard you were on, I thought, well, I'll call and see what your thoughts are on this.
Okay, sure. So just for our audience's sake, I'll describe what pulmonary hypertension is. Pulmonary hypertension is a condition that can be secondary to other lung diseases, or sometimes it can happen all by itself, in which case it's called primary pulmonary hypertension. And just like the main body has a blood pressure that you can measure on your arm, well, the lung has its own circulation, and the blood pressure in the lungs can be high. And when the blood pressure in the lungs is high, it does a few things, more than a few things, but it can damage the lung tissue itself, but it also can affect the heart, because the right side of the heart pumps the blood to the lungs, and if the pressure in the lungs is higher than normal, then that heart has to pump harder, and sometimes that heart can fail, and you can get right-sided heart failure. And women with pulmonary hypertension, when they become pregnant, the condition generally gets worse because of the increased fluid requirements of pregnancy. So as far as a specific case, it's hard to say if a woman has severe pulmonary hypertension, having a pregnancy is not recommended. It's recommended that they not conceive. With your niece's case, you know, I don't know if it's mild, moderate, or severe, but she should probably kind of know that. And if it's only mild, let's say, she should maybe get second opinions if they really want to have children and find out, you know, what really are the risks. Because sometimes what I've noticed in my years as a physician is that when it comes to pregnancy and risks in pregnancy, I've seen a lot where doctors exaggerate them. So that, let's say, if it's about a 10 or 15% risk of a very bad outcome, they'll make it sound like it's the end of the world. But let's say if it is 15%, I'm just picking that number out of the air. You know, some people may be willing to take a chance with a 15% risk. Other people would say, absolutely not. I'm not going to take a chance with a 15% risk. So that really would be up to the individual. But it's important that they get some really good hard facts and concrete numbers instead of this, them saying you should not get pregnant at all. So having said that, if the risks are unacceptable and they really think that they should not conceive, and they do that, of course, prayerfully discerning, then natural family planning is what they ought to do. And if the risks are very severe, then they should learn natural family planning very well, and they should apply the rules very conservatively. And if they do that, then the chances of them conceiving it are going to be very, very small. And if they stick to the rules very, very conservatively, their chances of conceiving actually will be less than if the woman were on birth control pills. So it'd be a very, very effective way of avoiding pregnancy. So that, and that would be perfectly allowable because as far as from a moral standpoint, if there is a grave or serious reason to not conceive, then the church says you can use natural family planning. And that's from Humana Vitae.
Denise?
Yeah, so to do a sterilization is still against the teaching of the church. She does have a severe case of it. I don't know what test they did, but it's a
hang on a second, Denise, because we got your question about sterilization. I think that the doctor can answer that really quickly, but we are right up against the break, so we'll take a quick break and we'll come right back and get that answer for you here on Catholic Answers Live.
Every question is important. Ask yours today on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett, host of Catholic Answers Live, and I'm looking forward to meeting you this September 28th to 30th at our fourth annual National Apologetics Conference here in beautiful San Diego. This is one conference you are not going to want to miss. The theme is the reunion of all Christians, and we've got an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to fire you up. Catholic historian Steve Weidenkopf, apologist Mark Brumley, apologist Devin Rose, plus all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. For almost four decades, Catholic Answers has been engaging our separated brethren in charity to bring them to the fullness of the truth. Join us for a lively and inspiring conference designed to help you play an active part in the reunion of all Christians. This is where it all begins. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite and inform your faith. Seats are available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register.
We hear it every year, the perennial question, what are you giving up for Lent? And there's nothing wrong with doing without certain things you may have an affinity for. But this year, why not turn the question around and ask, what are you taking on for Lent? Did you know that by investing as little as 5 minutes a day, you can take on a Lenten practice that will both build up and inform your faith? A Daily Defense is the perfect book for your Lenten journey. Jimmy Akin takes up a different challenge for every day of the year, teaching you how you can defend the faith and give answers to Catholics and skeptics alike. And it's user-friendly, so finding the answers can be quick and easy. Make this Lent one to remember. Order your copy of A Daily Defense today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This weekend on Register Radio, Jeanette and Matthew talk with the National Catholic Register's Peter Jesserer Smith, who recently returned from Haiti, about the resilience of Haitian Catholics. Later, Father Benedict Kiley, founder of Nazarene.org, will share his recent visit to Iraq. Register Radio airs 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And coming up right after Catholic Answers Live today, Father Spitzer's Universe tackles the question, what did Jesus say about the Eucharist and the Passion? Right here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Don't forget, we're going on a cruise this June, Catholic Answers, June 3rd through 10th. We start in Montreal and we end up in Boston. And I just mention it again because pretty soon we got to send whatever cabins are left back to the cruise line. You may still be able to get one. It just won't be a guarantee anymore. So if you've been thinking about going on that Catholic Answers cruise with us, go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com or give the Cruise Authority a call at 800-707-1634. We are having an open forum for pro-life issues today, a pro-life open forum, and Dr. Delgado is our guest, Dr. George Delgado. And Dr. Delgado, when we left, just to kind of wrap that up, you had kind of completed your answer, but the kind of concluding question there was, what about sterilization?
Yeah, so she's kind of slipped that one on, under the music. And so it goes without saying that from a Catholic perspective, natural family planning is allowed when there is a grave or serious reason to not conceive. However, sterilization and contraception, such as birth control pills and other hormonal methods and barrier methods, all those are what we call intrinsically evil, which means that they are never allowed if they're used for contraception's sake or sterilization's sake, if they're the primary motive. So because of that, sterilization would not be acceptable for the niece of the caller.
Okay. And Denise, thank you so much for that call. We go now to Susie in Columbus, Ohio, listening on St. Gabriel Radio. Susie, you're on with Dr. George Delgado.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. When I go to the grocery store, I see food that says non-GMO labels, and I see hair products that say not tested on animals. And I'm just wondering, as a medical consumer, will we ever
Did we lose Susie? Okay. Excuse me. I think that call dropped, Doctor, but I do have a note on what Susie was asking, and it was about disclosure so people will know if immoral testing has been done on medicines.
Right. Well, you know, I think that's a great question, and most of this sort of disclosure on GMO, genetically modified organisms and other things, organic things, it's pushed by the marketplace, and so they know that people may be attracted to that, and so from a marketing standpoint, they label it. And then sometimes, of course, there are government regulations that start to regulate it. So I think the way for us to reach the point where there is full disclosure when vaccines or medications are produced in ways that are immoral, for example, by using or by benefiting from abortion, by using fetal cells that were taken from aborted babies and things of that sort, is for those of us who know about this to increase awareness so that more people will know, because there will be a certain percentage of people, even if they aren't strongly pro-life, that, you know, sort of the what's commonly called the ick factor will play, and that there will be a certain repugnance to wanting to use medications or vaccines that somehow are involved with abortion or somehow are contaminated with tissues like that. So I think by increasing awareness, then more people will demand this, and the more we demand it, the more vaccine makers will start to change. And then we might be able to get some traction, and somewhere in there probably get enough support where we could pass full disclosure laws.
And thank you very much, Susie, for that call. I'm sorry we seem to have dropped you somehow there, but we go now to Marcus in Burlingame, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. It's a pro-life open forum today, Marcus, and you are on with Dr. George Delgado. What's your question?
Hi, here. I am a second-year medical student here in the Bay Area in California, and we are doing all our reproductive unit. So we're learning about, you know, everything that goes along with reproduction. And lots of the courses are teaching about abortion. And I'm pro-life, you know. I'm against contraception. Right. And I'm, unfortunately, I'm the one of the only medical students that are in my class. And it almost in the whole school here. So all my professors are teaching about these medications and why it's okay to use these kind of procedures on women. And they have all these, you know, arguments. And my question to you is, how do I deal with professors, fellow students, fellow colleagues, and pretty soon other physicians in the hospital going through, you know, issues like abortion and contraception and these kind of topics?
Right. Where's your medical school, Marcus?
So I'm at Touro University, California, the osteopathic school in the North Bay.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, it's similar there to other schools, I'm sure, throughout the country. And in my experience, too, is that the medical school faculty, and for the most part, students are very much anti-life and pro-abortion. They call themselves pro-choice, but I don't see a lot of choice involved there. And so what you have to remember is that you have to have tough skin, have an armor on, and you have to watch out for the guards, because there are people who will try to pick you off. There'll be snipers around. They'll try to catch you and find ways to get you out, to disqualify you from your medical training, both in medical school and residency. So my advice is to know that you will be persecuted, first of all, and just have to accept that. And Christ promised that we would be, if we were true to him, that we would be persecuted. So that's okay, because if you're persecuted for good things, then that's all for God's greater glory. So be ready for that and be spiritually strong and armored for that. But on the other hand, persecution will come and find you, so you don't have to go find it. So don't go picking battles that are unnecessary. Don't try to be a big blip on everybody's radar screen. Try to stay under the radar, at the same time, though, never denying your beliefs when you're confronted. So that's really the balance that I always recommend people do. And then as you get farther along in your medical training and you're graduate and all that, then you're less subject to the whims of those who have to pass you and who have to evaluate you. And then you can speak out more and more on things and be less concerned about the consequences. But if you stand up and speak up on all pro-life things now as a medical student, and you don't make it to medical school, well, then you're not going to be as effective later on. But that, of course, is different than compromising your beliefs and denying God's teachings. So again, it's a balance there, and it's a clear line though, and you always have to stay on the right side of that clear line. And what I would do to be ready when they do confront you and try to persecute you is have very good and cogent arguments for all of your pro-life positions, whether it's against abortion or it's against contraception. And so be very well versed in natural law arguments, because most of them are not going to listen to religious arguments. If they ask you if you're Catholic or if you are, or if you're a non-Catholic Christian, then of course you say you are, and you say that of course that influences my beliefs, just like if you have a religion, they influence your beliefs, or if you're atheist, that influences your beliefs. But then come at them with natural law arguments and saying why abortion is against the natural design, how killing an innocent person goes against our natural design, and how you can very conclusively demonstrate that from the time of conception, the zygote, then the embryo, then the fetus, is a human person and is an individual human organism that should be protected just like anybody else. Now there's a continuum of development. And then you can explain how with contraception, how contraception goes against the natural design, because the natural design is for human beings to be male and female to be attracted to each other, to pair in a lifelong relationship, and that, you know, the institution of marriage predates religion, and how the way our bodies are made, they're designed to go together, male and female, to conceive and to have offspring so that our species can be propagated. And how the natural design is that many days during the month, a woman is not fertile. And so there are natural fertile times and infertile times. And so that's the basis of natural family planning. While all these other things alter, impede, or circumvent the natural design that we have, and they go against human nature. So I think I would really, really be well-versed in those so that you can talk to people that way. And always remember that to be charitable, because you're coming from a perspective of enlightenment. They're coming from a perspective and from an environment of darkness. So really we have to, in many ways, have pity on these people, and we have to be extra charitable. And always remember that all conversions of heart take place in the context of relationships. So you want to form relationships. You don't want to be judgmental, but you always want to present the truth and present the truth charitably. And you can be a great light if you take that approach.
Does that help you, Mark?
That makes really, really a lot of sense here. And it was really some good advice. I liked a lot of those points that you made.
Well, thank you very much for that call. Dr. Delgado, just out of my own curiosity, are there any organizations for pro-life doctors?
Yes, absolutely. If you're not already a member, Students for Life has a medical branch, Medical Students for Life, and they will actually go around the country giving talks at medical schools. So if they have one or two students that are interested, you can get them to come out and talk to your class or to your medical school. And because oftentimes it's more beneficial to have outsiders come in and talk about these topics, and they do it in a very non-threatening, non-confrontational way. So I would definitely look into that. I would also consider joining the student section of the Catholic Medical Association. And the Catholic Medical Association actually offers a medical boot camp for medical students, where you can go and you spend about a week and really boning up on all of these ethical issues and all of the spiritual issues associated with them. So you can visit their website and look up their medical student boot camp, and that would be a great thing to do. And they will subsidize that for people who can't afford it.
Thank you very much for that, Marcus. I'll just also point out that there Students for Life also has chapters for lawyers or people in law school. So whether you're in law school or medical school, Students for Life has opportunities for you. Or if you're in undergraduate, there are lots of undergraduate chapters of Students for Life. You can find them by just going to Students for Life on the internets. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more Pro-Life Open Forum with Dr. George Delgado right after this.
Hi, this is Bishop James Wall from the Diocese of Gallup, New Mexico. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Layla Rose says, Trent Horn really knows how to get people thinking and talking about abortion. Persuasive Pro-Life is an invaluable handbook for anyone who wants to become more skilled at defending the humanity of the preborn. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the online shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In John 7, Jesus was teaching in the temple, and they then tried to arrest him. But the gospel says that no one laid a hand on him, because his hour had not yet come. Later, at the Last Supper, he was to say, "Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that your Son may glorify you." Nothing about his mission was accidental. His hour was deliberate and divinely calculated. We, on the other hand, spend so much energy fussing about time, and we really don't understand it at all. All we really need to be concerned about with regard to time is how well prepared we will be for our hour, our final hour. The good news is that His hour and ours intersect. Because of His final hour can be our finest hour. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Pro-Life Open Forum today with our guest, Dr. George Delgado, Medical Director of Culture of Life Family Healthcare. We go now to Annie in Kansas City, Missouri, listening on 1090 AM. Annie, you are on with Dr. Delgado. What's your question?
Thank you, Dr. Delgado. I've been married for 10 years, and I haven't had conjugal relations with my husband for 7 years because I didn't like it. And we do have one child who's 10, and I didn't like relations the way that my husband approached it, and he had a hard time following through with the act, and it would just go on and on and on. And, but my priest said, you know, that was my obligation. Whenever he wanted that, I had to, you know, do that. So I did. And then, about 7 years ago, I found, credit card records that my husband was on date.com and match.com. So I went to my priest and he said that that constituted an affair and I don't know how far it went. So I could, cease the debt, if you will, is what he calls it. But if I ever did it again, then I'd have to act like that never happened. So I was, yay, I'd love to have a justified marriage. I was like, yay, I'm relieved of that because it was horrible. But now we're in retrovi and, you know, I feel like it would help if I could bring myself to have relations with him. Like maybe I'm being selfish and, you know, he brings up like, oh, you're this big Catholic and you're not Catholic and, you know, just all this stuff. And
so
we joined a new parish and the pastoral associate there, she suggested that I go to a sex therapist. And so I just wondered if there was anything I could do to increase sexual desire because it's like the reverse of what you suggested to the couple of giving up a sacrifice, like not doing it in mucus
okay.
time.
All right. Annie, hang on. We'll let Dr. Delgado take a shot there.
Yeah. So, you know, I agree with the priest that, you know, the husband and wife, when they marry, they promise each other their bodies. So you've promised your body to him. He promised his body to you. But of course, when there's infidelity, adultery, then that can cease. But now that you're repairing your relationship, and I assume that he's no longer having any kind of extramarital contact, then I think it's a great opportunity for you to re-explore that. And there's several issues here because you do owe him your body, but at the same time, he owes you respect for your body. So he has to be respectful of what he demands from you. And if the kinds of relations that he wants are, you know, not tender, loving care in their qualitative aspects, well, then that's not right either. So there's certainly, it has to be a total self-giving of one to another. He has to be totally looking out for you. You have to be totally looking out for him. And that's how marriage works. So I think counseling would be good. I would be very careful in going to a so-called sex therapist, because what I've at least read about them is that oftentimes they will try to use immoral ends in order to achieve good, and that's never acceptable. So I would only go to a sex therapist if it was a faithful Catholic sex therapist. So you have to really vet them very carefully and make sure that he or she will not ask you to do anything that might be immoral in order to improve your desire for sexual activity. And if you can't find one, then at least get just a regular sex or a regular Catholic psychologist or therapist, just to talk things out and to give you and your husband a good way to discuss things. So that would be very important, either or both of those. Secondly, you might have something called hyposexual disorder, which is a disorder that's more common in women who have very low libido. So that could be it too. The talking therapy would be important, though, to explore your past to see if there was anything in the past. Oftentimes, their history of sexual abuse or assault or molestation, and to deal with those feelings, because often that can lead to decreased sexual desire. But there's also a physiologic part, and there you can treat it with medications. One medication that showed some success in studies is called bupropion. That is, it's an antidepressant, but it's also been shown to increase sexual desire. Other antidepressants in what's called the serotonin reuptake inhibitor class, they actually have been shown to decrease sexual desire. So if you're on one of those, you should see about maybe getting off of that and maybe switching to bupropion. So I think doing all of those things, and then also talking to your husband and being very frank with him and telling him, you know, I want to increase our sexual contacts, and I want to be a good wife to you. And so these are the kinds of things that I know stimulate me sexually, and tell them, you know, whatever it is. Maybe it just starts by hand-holding. Maybe just starting by going on walks, little kisses on the cheek. And then you slowly build that warmth and that tenderness between the two of you so that it can advance. And you both have to be patient with it, but I think if you're working on it diligently and showing him that you're really willing to try, then I think he'll respond to that. And also I would ask him, what affection do you like, so that you yourself are showing him that you're trying, and then you give him the affection that really he likes. And I think doing that, you really can make progress. Most important thing, though, is that you're trying and that you've come to the realization that it's not healthy for a marriage not to be sexually together. And but keep that up and keep talking to the priest and keep strong in the sacraments, going to confession frequently and going to Mass as often as you can.
Thank you very much for that call, Annie. We go now. I'll try to get through as many calls here as I can. Dr. Delgado, up to the top of the hour, because we've got just a short time left. Jason in Clarksville, Tennessee, listening on Immaculate Conception Radio. What's your question for Dr. Delgado?
Hi, Dr. Delgado. Just first off, a word of thanks for being on the program. I'm sure many graces are coming through the broadcast for the listeners. My question kind of dovetails off, I think it was the caller from South Carolina who was dropped. So after I became a father, I just happened to kind of land on that research about the aborted cell cultures with vaccines. And I followed it pretty closely and done some of the recommended things that you mentioned, such as letter writing, advocating at the federal and state levels for fair labeling. But now I'm starting to read some of the work of Dr. Teresa Deischer, who I'm sure you might be familiar with, and some of the studies that are showing the case of insertional DNA, where that DNA from those aborted children can be so small and fragmented that it has the possibility of inserting into the nucleus of the person receiving the vaccine.
Jason, I got to ask you you got to ask Dr. Delgado a question, because we're getting close to the end here.
If you had cases of children who were aborted, either boys or girls, what are the repercussions if insertional DNA proves to be a legitimate factor? What happens there if say you are female and you receive male DNA or vice versa? Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question. And these vaccines that are grown on human cell cultures, they have been shown to be heavily contaminated with human DNA. And I've spoken to Dr. Deichler in person about this. What was not known is really what it's causing. And so we don't know if they got Y chromosomes, because both boys and girls have X chromosomes. We don't know what the effect is, if they'll get fragments of the Y chromosome inserted into their DNA. That remains to be seen, but I think it's an area that deserves research, and certainly there's a lot of suspicion that there may be other problems being caused by this DNA being inserted. So we'll have to stay alert on that and keep posted.
Thank you so much for that call, Jason. We're going to move real quick now to Casey. Excuse me. No, we're not. We're going to go to Kathy in Sierra Vista, Arizona, listening to Catholic Answers on the Internet. Kathy, your question as quickly as you can for Dr. Delgado. Nope. No, Kathy. Wait. Kathy, are you there with us?
Yes.
Okay. That was my fault. Go ahead, Kathy, your question.
Okay. My husband's brother was in Oregon a couple years ago, and he got extremely depressed and psychotic. He thought he was dead, and he said he couldn't swallow. So he was finally hospitalized and had a feeding tube for food and water and psychiatric meds. And after 3 weeks, there wasn't much change. They had a family conference at the hospital, and the psychiatrist said 3 weeks of medications hadn't worked yet, and he didn't think he could do anymore. So that left my brother-in-law's kids with the decision to remove the tube and put him in hospice. And my husband and I objected. He didn't have a terminal disease. We objected to him going into hospice. And then we also noted that, according to Catholic ethics, food and water is basic care, even if it's a feeding tube.
Right.
And the palliative care doctor there, she said she was Catholic, and she said the formula used in the tube feeding was made up of chemicals, and therefore it was extraordinary care. And she said she was familiar with canon law that supported her position, and I just had never heard anything like that before.
And Kathy, I'm going to let Dr. Delgado respond, because we're coming up to the top of the hour.
So no, that I from what you're saying, her comment was not correct, because the church has been very clear that it considers fluid and nutrition by whatever means possible to be part of ordinary care, unless there are circumstances otherwise. For example, in the Philippines or in another poor country, let's say, in many areas, you're not going to be able to give a feeding through a tube because it's not available or because families can't afford it. In that case, it would be extraordinary there and would be what we'd call disproportionate. But in the United States, in most cases, it's considered proportionate and part of normal care. So the only reason really to stop the feeding in a person like that, assuming the person was not imminently dying, would be if the feeding were not tolerated. So just because the medications were not working, that would not be a reason to stop. It would have to be if the feeding itself was not tolerated, if it was causing an undue burden, and then they could be stopped from an ethical standpoint.
Thank you very much, Kathy, for that call. Thank you, Dr. Delgado, for that answer. Thanks for everybody who called this week. Dr. Delgado, I really appreciate you being with us for this pro-life open forum. Lots of very, very helpful stuff happened today, I think. Thanks again.
My pleasure. The hour went too fast.
It did. It does seem to when you're on, Dr. Delgado. Thanks very, very much. And thanks to everybody who listened this week to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks to Nick sitting back there behind the knobs and the dials. And thanks to Nathan, who was handling the calls this hour. The only reason I'm saying thank you to them is they're both begging me to say thank you to them on the air. And thank you to Maury for having Nick as a son. I am Cy Kellett. This is Catholic Answers Live. We'll be back Monday. In the meantime, Jesus Christ is the light of the nations. Stay in that light, and we will see you on Monday.